First of all, I would like you to introduce yourself and to explain the specific aspects of your own particular situation in Israel in relation to the general surrounding atmosphere and climate and political approaches.
Well, I am a writer and a journalist. I would say that my task in Israel is to vocalize an opinion that is widely spread but gets zero coverage in the media. 30% of Israeli public opinion, according to the public surveys, supports the idea of one democratic state on the all territory of Palestine. But this 30% get absolutely zero exposure in the media. In my opinion, the problem of Israel is the same problem as problem of France or of the Western world. That is the vast distortion of public discourse. That the public discourse is taken out of public and privatized, like so many other things are privatized. If we would have free public discourse in France or in Israel, things that happen would never happen. That's why I see the most important thing is not even liberation of Palestine, but the first thing is liberation of public discourse. I believe basically in natural good of mankind, that human beings are basically good. This kind of old opinion of Rousseau is very valid with me. And I think that in course, if we would be able to exchange our opinions freely, we would come to the good, to the public good. And it comes to a simple thing that in Palestine, we don't need exclusions. The idea of something, yes, everything is like that, but there should be exclusions. I reject this thing. We need normal situation, like everywhere. Everybody should have equal rights, equal right to vote, equal right to move, and then we shall solve all our problems like everywhere.
Vivon, if I've understood correctly, you propose not only to decolonize Palestine, the state of Palestine as it is at the moment, but to decolonize the whole Palestinian territory and to include, to dismantle the structure of the state of Israel to create one whole country. Could you give some details of this and specify exactly what you propose?
In our situation, we haven't got separate colony and metropolis. So when we try to speak in the terms of decolonization, it is not valid. We have a legal fiction of occupied territories, but it is just a legal fiction. In reality, it is one country where the non-Jews have no rights. For instance, my mother lives between two Palestinian villages in an exclusively Jewish settlement. Her neighbor on the right or on the left have no rights, she has rights. So for me, I don't speak about foreign people. I don't speak about somebody very far away. I speak about a situation that I am very much part of it. And I say, we can live together, but we can live together only on condition of equality.
We know that there's the problem of refusal and the massive vote for Sharon in repressing the and to support him in repressing the Palestinians. And we're aware of the situation of a kind of apartheid whereby Israeli citizens of Arab origins in Israel do not have the same rights. So if there is this massive vote for Sharon, how can you consider that the people in Israel could accept your idea of one total, single, united Palestine?
In my opinion, it is impossible to think in terms we should ask first Jews what they think. That is wrong approach everywhere, whether in France or in Palestine. We should ask the majority of people who live in this territory, whether they are Jews or Russians or Moroccans or whatever they are, and we shall get their answer after the public discourse will be restored. I think it's just a very wrong approach. We should first find out what the Jews want and dance from this point. No, we should dance from the point of view of the majority. And one more thing. You say about big vote for Sharon and support for Sharon. People of Israel now are subject to massive campaign of propaganda and disinformation, similar to one that the people of the Third Reich suffered. In such a way, people are human beings, are only human beings. If we are bombarded by propaganda, we become subject to propaganda. But now, we feel that all this propaganda effort in Israel is collapsing because of two reasons. One of them is economic catastrophe that is facing now everybody in Israel. Economy is absolutely in awful shape. And the second thing is obviously the fact that Sharon's army did not succeed to suppress Palestinians. So those two things, the failure economic and failure in the security, they bring down all the edifice of this nationalist propaganda.
So we are all aware of the demographic relationship between the Israeli people and the Palestinian people in the area. Do you not think that the Israeli Jews are afraid to accept the idea of being in a minority in such a state, in a single state? So what state do you propose? What kind of state? A lay state? A multi-religious state or whatever?
I am amazed that I hear this opinion so often in France, because it sounds to me like an opinion of Le Pen. Le Pen also says that people of France are threatened by infusion of foreigners. Isn't it basically what you say is that Le Pen is right? Because if you don't think that the Jews should be worried to become a minority, the French people of Toulon or wherever also are entitled to feel that they are about to become minority. If you reject the idea of racism, which is inherent in Le Pen, there is even more reason for you to reject it for Palestine. The world is indivisible, and it's very important for us to reject the same thing for everywhere, not to say, yes, it's true for Goyim, but it's different for Jews. But there is a second point that is also important. We don't have such thing as Jews as opposed to Arabs. That is also a fiction. In reality, we have 5 or 6 different communities, all of them quite separate. That's an old Israeli Ashkenazi community, a religious Jewish community, a Sephardi Oriental community, few Palestinian communities. All of them are quite separate. So the idea to say there are two sides is also a way of cheating. That is why nobody has a majority, even now. Now the Israeli elite succeeds to promote this idea of Jews versus all the rest. And that is something I want to have undone, buried, disappeared, non-existent. For instance, there is 1 million strong Russian community, which has a lot of things in common with Palestinians. Russians even intermarry with the same frequency with Palestinians as with ordinary Israelis. Many of them now go to the churches in clandestine way, hiding. They have many contacts with their Orthodox co-religionists on the Palestinian side. And for them, this division is not obvious at all. And the Arab Jews, people from North Africa, also have a lot of their own contacts with the Palestinian communities. So it's not obvious that this idea of dichotomy, Jews versus Gentiles, is the only valid one. In my opinion, we need one unitary state. One unitary state, not a federation of two quasi-state units, but with very big level of local autonomy, how to manage local affairs.
Could you give some details of what you would consider would be the kind of setup of the state? Would it be a presidential state with presidential elections? Would you have direct universal suffrage? Would it be a parliamentary arrangement or structure? And could you also say whether there is a state in the world that you would consider some kind of model for the harmony between the different communities within a country?
To this thing, one can answer in two stages. Stage one, basically, it's not necessary for us now to go into details how the people of Palestine will arrange their future. It's enough to run universal suffrage election. And the kind of people who would be elected on the general election with general suffrage would be able to sort out this thing. That is the answer, level one. But as a second stage, I have also my own dreams, what I would like to propose to such people, to the people. It does not mean that they have to accept my ideas. It's not necessary. But anyway, what I think that the best idea was the one, the idea of Soviets, the idea of power growing from grassroots. Instead of relegating it up to the top, that power should grow from the people, from the local communities, and the local communities, in my opinion, should form the upper state in Palestine or anywhere. I think that the Soviet construction is very good, actually. So, let's say, for me personally, and again, I separate it from the other thing, for me personally, the best model is the one of the Commune Parisienne. So this idea that was so well stated by Marx, and after that it was presented, obviously, in one of the best books, one of my favorite books, that's The State and the Revolution by Lenin, one who says that the power should grow from the people. And that is why maybe now there is no state that we would like to use as a model. Maybe we would be able to become a model for other states.
So is there any, even if there's no actual state that corresponds to a model for you, is there a constitution somewhere in the world that would act as a kind of a keystone for your model? For instance, the way things were organized in South Africa or in the Lebanon?
They did very important step in South Africa. They made very important step. In Lebanon also they make important steps, but not sufficient. Obviously it's very good direction, but not sufficient, because I really don't want to speak about it at length. But there are problems in South Africa quite a lot. And Lebanon also is far from solving its problems. So the direction is correct. But in my opinion, the power should be given to people. It should go much deeper to grassroots instead of being concentrated in the representatives that talk and can't act. In our country, we have absolutely beautiful culture of Palestinian peasants who create incredibly rich culture of their own. That is the only real cultural element we have in our country. And I think we should promote it as much as possible and to get to this kind of grassroots to learn from it and to try to connect those things with cultural luggage that different Jews brought from different country, but basing it in opinion on the Palestinian peasants, who are, in my opinion, are the bedrock to found the state on.
So you seem to be speaking from a position of reason and also speaking very strongly from the heart, but how do you position yourself in relation to international law? Israel was created with the help of a declaration of the UNO, and also the state of Palestine was declared through a declaration, the declaration 1397. So how do you see yourself in relation to the international law?
If two people have a contract, for instance, I buy from you this tape recorder. We write a contract. I buy from you tape recorder. I pay it for you €200. Then I take your tape recorder and walk away without paying you €200. Would you consider that still legal right is with me? All the things you mentioned were all conditioned. Starting from the Balfour Declaration, they were all conditioned. Balfour Declaration was conditioned on the rights of the Palestinians. Resolution of United Nations of those days were conditioned on two things: on the creation of the Palestinian state and on the Resolution 192 of return of the Palestinians. So it is the same to say now that you support one part of it is the same as saying, yes, I did not pay you €200, but I shall keep the machine anyway. And so purely legally, all those things do not bind anybody anymore. In the same way as Oslo Agreement was also made void by Israeli actions, we have now legal vacuum in Palestine. In my opinion, now it would be a mistake to try to do some temporary solution. For instance, you have a computer. You have a problem with the system. Your system does not function very well. You try to make system restore. To go to what happened yesterday. It doesn't work. You go one day before, you see the system does not work. Sometimes you say, okay, I shall reformat the disk and shall put a new system.
So what do you think is the main obstacle for the creation of the state? Is the first step not that of recognizing the rights of the Palestinians and recognizing their equality and also recognizing the history of this country and of this area, and the fact that they are like half-brothers, and they must come to terms with this on both a human level and a historical level and a cultural level. So is the question of human dignity not something that should take precedence even over the political or legal aspects?
I agree with you absolutely. We can really take care of the Palestinian situation from the point of view of what you call droit de l'homme. I think that is the best and the most correct, most basic approach. Yes, I agree with you. But another thing, one of the biggest sources of problem that we experience is support of the most reactionary parts of the Israeli society by the organized Jewish communities abroad. That is their source of power, and that is the source of our trouble. A long time ago, in 1967, a very wise Jewish thinker, Isaac Deutscher, who is a biographer of Trotsky, visited Israel. He spent some time in the country. And he wrote few very important lines. I quote, wealthy Jewish businessman who seems to be at home in New York, Boston, Marseille, wherever, and seem to operate as a usual businessman, is in his heart very proud of belonging to the chosen people. And he translates this pride into support of the most reactionary elements within Israel. Those people promote power of rabbis. They undermine even very modest socialist elements, and they promote hatred towards Gentile. Provided that this wealthy businessman own many, many newspapers, television stations, and radios, it's not strange that they are so powerful in promoting their racist attitude in Israel and also in all the world. So that is, and that was an opinion of Isaac Deutscher, spoken long time ago in 1967. It's even more valid now.
So you spoke of the attitude and the mindset of Jewish businessmen and their feeling of superiority over everyone. And do you not think this is also the attitude of the Israeli state, which pretends that it is superior to everyone else and doesn't give them their due respect?
Exactly. That is what Deutscher said, that those people influence the state of Israel in the same direction as their mindset. So it happened, very peculiar thing, that the state of Israel is not managed by its own citizens. It's managed from outside. And we want to return the power back to people that live actually in Palestine. In my opinion, globalization and Zionism are like two sides of one coin. That is, it happened that people that promote globalization are people who support Zionism. That is one of those interesting events. And when you see a crypto-Zionist, you can always expect that he would be also a supporter of mondialization, or whatever you call it.
Yes, is this not, in fact, what's happening? We're at the moment witnessing the massive support of the USA for the State of Israel, and is not within this perspective of globalization that, in fact, the Americans are promoting Israel as the kind of figurehead, the spearhead of its globalization movement in the Middle East. Is this not particularly what is happening, for instance, in Palestine? The same thing is happening as in Mexico, for instance, whereby Palestinian workers and Mexican workers are exploited in the same way. And in Mexico, they're exploited by Americans, and in Israel, they're exploited. The Palestinians are exploited by Israelis and others.
Yes, the world is, as I say, as we said before, the world is inseparable, indivisible. It's the same problems everywhere. Just it happens that Palestine is a model for this world in the same very way as the fight for Spain in 1936 was the beginning of the big struggle against fascism. In the same very way, the struggle for Palestine now is a struggle for the model of the future of the world.
Exactly. You described the composition of the territory of Israel as being a very tribal society, and the way it is broken up. And do you not think this is what people want to promote in the world through globalization? They want to break the world down into a series of tribes?
Yes, it is true. That is obviously their plan, but this plan could misfire. Sometimes people build plans and they hope that they will do it in the same way. But again, those plans can misfire. As for instance, the Russians were brought into Israel in order to fight Arabs. But it's not obvious that tomorrow the Russians and Palestinians would not unite on some different basis. Or the second example is the black community, the Afro-American community in the United States, that also was played very much against the white society for a very long time. But now you see that within this Afro-American community, there are the strongest voices against globalization, against mondialism, against the war, and against Zionism and oppression in Palestine. There are two people that I kind of... Barbara Lee, who was the only voice in America against the war in Afghanistan, and Cynthia McKinney, who is the most strong Afro-American voice for the rights of Palestinians. And the third comparison would be with the Muslim community in France that was also could be seen as undermining the coherence, the unity of French people. But now we see that within this Islamic community in France, there are very strong voices against mondialism, against Palestinian oppression. And I think, despite the fact that obviously, bad forces try to utilize them, but could be that they are the strong support of the best that there is in France.
And in the case of Israel, do you not think this fear that has been instilled in different Israeli communities constitutes this, the kind of cement that is holding these people together? Only in the case of the fear of war, whereas if this fear or this war were to disappear, these communities would perhaps explode or would not be so united.
That is very true. What you say is very true. Just 1 month before the beginning of Intifada, I went to a big demonstration near the jail of Ramle. In this jail, the most important Moroccan Jewish leader was held, Rabbi Aryeh Deri. And there were thousands of people coming from all over the country who felt that it is unbearable that every Moroccan leader finds himself in jail in Israel. It is a big and very important community, the Moroccan Jewish community, very important community, but it was always without a leader, because whenever there would be a leader, he will be always persecuted. That is why the feeling was that Israel is on the verge of changes, and then Intifada started, and the Moroccans went back to be ruled by the Ashkenazi elite. Yes, it is true that there is this very well-known imperialist tendency. When they don't know how to rule, they promote strife. You remember in Louis Ferdinand Céline, in his travel to the end of the night, he says, when he describes the war of 1914, he says, they gave us an order, citizens of the home of Fatherland A, start to fight, citizens of Fatherland B. It is true. That is why, in my opinion, the imperialist forces can build coherence and patriotism on the base of fear and strife. But we should rebuild it from the grassroots, basing it on the soil, on the people that work, to do it absolutely other way around, not basing it on fear, but basing it on love.
Yes, I find there's a lot of similarity to between what you say and the ideas of Noam Chomsky, for instance, as regards American imperialism and their expansionism without around the whole world at the time of the Gulf War and also recently to the 11th of September.
Yes, absolutely. I am kind of deeply indebted to Noam Chomsky, whom I kind of like personally very much. I had kind of pleasure to meet him and discuss with him, and he obviously influenced me as he influenced everybody else who is thinking now. He is one of the most important thinkers of our age, so it's naturally, yes. An Israeli newspaper, Jerusalem Post, called me the Israel's own Noam Chomsky, and I was very proud of it.
Some people say that finally, in the final analysis, you must be somebody who is profoundly religious because they have trouble in identifying you and putting their finger on you, and they get the impression that you must be someone who is deeply religious, in fact. So what do you think of that?
But yes, I think that my vision is much more religious than that of Noam. Yes, I admit it, because I live in the Holy Land, and obviously in society that is deeply religious, and for me it is obviously very, very important element of my vision and the vision of other people who live together with me in the Holy Land, whatever faith they adhere to. A religion in the Holy Land is not a divisive factor. It's very important to understand. For instance, there is a beautiful village of Abud that I wrote about it not long time ago. In this village, there is a burial cave and the old Byzantine church of Santa Barbara. And this place is very much attended to by Muslims and Christians who come there to pray together to their own protector. In other words, the folk religion of Palestine is very much integrated for people who belong to different religions. They still come together to the same holy shrines. Whatever religion they belong to, they go to pray in the same places together. Or, for instance, the Church of Nativity in Bethlehem, that is one of the very dear shrines, that is also a place that is very much loved by local Muslims as much as by local Orthodox or Catholics. All of them go and attend this place, mentioned in Quran many times, but it's anyway very, very dear shrine. So it's important to understand that in our country, religion is not something that divides people, it is something that unites people.